Hey there, fellow truth seekers. It's Jamie Grogan, founder of Solutions for Solopreneurs, an organization dedicated to the healers of the world. We remove the tech overwhelm and the confusion that comes with it. This podcast serves those who need a soft place to fall, a comforting and accepting space to explore the spiritual world. So settle in and listen as our guests share their struggles, challenges, and triumphs on their way to entrepreneurship. Hi, everybody. It's Jamie Grogan with Solutions for Solopreneurs. We are continuing our series, Journey to Entrepreneurship, where this month I've been focusing a lot on up-and-coming music artists. And today we're talking to Darius. I'm going to let him introduce himself in a moment, but I want to make sure that if you are listening to this or you have stumbled on the YouTube channel, that you realize that you are in the right place. What I always say is, no matter where you are in life, no matter your age, no matter your socioeconomic status, no matter the story that you're telling yourself, you can launch a business. You can be successful, you can be profitable, and you can do it in your own way. There are no gurus out there that are going to tell you exactly what's right for you. So this podcast is all about gaining that self-confidence, learning from real people, real everyday people who are having the same struggles and challenges that you are. So, Darius, can you go ahead and introduce yourself for us, please?
Yes, my name is Darius West. I am a director and editor, filmmaker, and have been an entrepreneur for the better part of the last six, seven years. Mm-hmm. And have been working on the project documentary for the last 5 years that is being released through Warner Music this fall. It's the first documentary about Christian hip hop. So we're in the throes of the release and the soundtrack, the film and everything involved. So yes.
That's awesome. That's wonderful. That is a topic that is not covered enough. It is definitely not covered enough. I have a very personal, I have a personal kind of relationship with Christian hip hop, and I'll explain that later. But so tell us your role in the, as far as the directorship goes, how did you come into that? Like, what's the journey to that as far as your past goes?
Yeah. The journey in to becoming a director has been pretty, it's been a really cool process for me, you know, looking back. You know, when you look back, you kind of say, oh, okay, I see what God was doing.
Right.
You know what I'm
saying? Right.
You know, because ever since I was maybe 15, 16, I was a dancer and choreographer. Then now I was, you know, over, you know, 30 to 40 dancers at one time. So it was always in the forefront in terms of leading and directing in that sense with choreography. You know, we're talking about the early 90s at this time. And, you know, it wasn't choreography dance, you know, or choreography in general, or hip hop was not really prevalent in dance in the church. So,
right.
And so I was one of the young people at that time, you're talking 1990, 91, who just kind of took the bull by the horns and said, hey, we're going to do this, even if people don't like it. You know what I'm saying? So it turned into what was a small group into a large group. And, you know, then every year we're performing at the Azusa Conference, you know, in front of tens of thousands of people who, you know, also saw from TBN. Just, you know, just very something that a young boy at that time, young man, is not even imagining. It just having this passion of like, hey, I have this passion and we should just do it. So that turned into an opportunity. So I started dancing when I was 15 or 16, because I grew up in North Carolina at this time when I was a teenager, 16, 17, or whatever. I was in Tulsa, but I grew up in North Carolina as a young man, as a church boy, you know, glasses and, you know, singing in the choir, you know, the whole, yeah. You know, yep. The Church of God denomination. My mom couldn't wear makeup, couldn't wear pants, you know, the whole thing. So dancing in the church, you know, was strictly shouting. That was it. Anything other than that was boogaloo, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it wasn't until I moved to Oklahoma, Tulsa, Oklahoma, and then we started attending a church at the time. It was called Higher Dimensions, you know, Bishop Carlton Pearson. And so he was very, he gave the young people the opportunity to express themselves through the arts and in the youth ministry. So that he, at that time, you know, whether it was rap or dance, he always considered it backdoor evangelism. You know, in other words, these are the people, they can reach people I can reach, was really his moniker. So right. He, you know, there was a platform that he helped create for us and for myself in particular. And so this, two to three years of just doing this gave me the opportunity to go on tour with an artist at the time who was like the top artist at the time. His name was Carmen. You know, he was well known in the Christian community and Christian contemporary music world. And so I was one of four dancers that were the first dancers ever to go on tour with a Christian contemporary artist. Mm-hmm. You know, Carmen kind of paved that trail. So you can imagine a kid who had just moved to Oklahoma in 88, you know, as a freshman in high school. And, you know, in 94, he's traveling around the world, you know. It's like, where does country boy come from? You know, I pay a lot of respect and honor to my mom. You know, I think a lot of my desire to achieve what I envision or have a passion for really came from her, because she had this great passion, or she really literally had a vision that God showed her that she should go to Tulsa, Oklahoma and attend Oral Roberts University. You know, you can imagine, you know, we're in the South. I ain't never heard of Oklahoma, you know, even in history class, you know,
right.
Maybe we skimmed over, but like, where is that? Where is Tulsa? You know what I'm saying? So, you know, you going up in the hood and everybody, where you going? Where? Tulsa, where? Y'all don't be wearing cowboy boots, you know, so you get the whole, you know, everybody on the street kind of, you know, talking trash, so you don't know. But, you know, but her tenacity to do so and you know, uprooted herself and her two young boys to go to a foreign land, in a sense, you know, culture shocks. You know, and it took the better part of about a year and a half for us to get, you know, us as teenage boys to get used to it. But I think the combination of her following her dream ignited our dreams.
Right.
And I see that a lot. So just get back to the question. So, you know, going on tour with Carmen and then eventually I get a call to go on tour with Kirk Franklin and the family, you know, as a choreographer and dancer. This, you're talking about 1998, 99.
Ooh,
yeah, at the peak of Kirk's career, you know what I'm saying? Yes. It was like, you know, it was a big tour. You had Fred Hammond, you had Lana Adams, you had K&K Mom, you had John Gray before he was John Gray. He was just a comedian then. And you had God's Property. And so I was brought on the tour as a choreographer and a dancer, because the group that I helped form at the time was Steps of Praise in San Diego. So I helped form the first one in Tulsa. They used that group to be the dancers for Kirk's set. So I was brought in as a dancer and choreographer to help, you know, do that. Then once I was done with that, I got a call from Tone. Of course, his name is B. Slade, but at the time he was Tone. You know, because I've known him for a while. Then, and I did my last tour with Tone. And then in 2000, I just kind of hung it up, say I want to be a regular guy. Mm. So the better part of 5 years, I was on the road. You know, going after something that I'd never imagined would, you know, come into what it was. So, but I was always placed in positions by God, I believe, because of my willingness to do something that would not be popular, but I knew God had put a passion for me to do it.
Right.
So the opportunity to do film really came later, because in 2000, I began to really do more, theatrical type productions and things like that. So I've been doing a lot of writing for play productions I did, you know, maybe over the span of that that time, 2000 to 2012, before I retired early from the gas company, because I started with them in 2000, I probably did like maybe four or five different productions, you know, some, you know, maybe less than 500, and the biggest was like $10,000, which for me was, you know, pretty big, you know, right. San Diego. I was living in San Diego at the time. But during this 12-year period, I would always go to the movies, you know. I was a bachelor. During the time when I was a bachelor, you know, this is the time where you can go to the movies 10 o'clock in the morning, and I stay all day to like 10, 11 o'clock at night. Right. They knew my name when I walked in the AMC Fashion Valley. They said, hey, what's up, Darius? Because they knew I was going to be there all day watching everything. And there was this one moment in, as a bachelor while I'm doing this, and I'm like, man, what's wrong with me? Who does this? You know? And it was like, who goes to the movie all day long and just watching a bunch of movies? So, and I didn't know at that time God was stirring in me the passion to do film, because I never really had the passion for film. I didn't grow up, you know, trying to want to be an artist or an actor or cinematographer. That wasn't even my passion, you know what I'm saying? It was just like, for me, it was all about what God was preparing for me for that next moment in life and season in life. So during that time, that's when the stirring up of the passion to become a filmmaker. So a lot of things I was writing, even things I was writing as a novel, became more, you know, what people read, man, it's so descriptive the way you say things. It's like, I can actually visualize it. And I begin to realize a lot of things that maybe I was writing could actually be film or, you know, TV and things like that. So yeah. Long story short, 2012, I retired early from the gas company. I was vested, you know, with the 401k, and also at the time, you had the pensions as well. They cut that off in 2005. So in 2000, I was actually, by 2004, I was actually vested in the company for my pension. So I had both. So right. When I retired early, I had, you know, the chunk of money to make a move with my family at the time, and to LA in 2012. And so 2014, the opportunity came to do the documentary about Mic Drop. But I had made, like I said, when I arrived to LA July 1st, 2012, I made a statement. I wrote in my journal, I said, within the next 8 years, by the eighth year, I plan to have a film that's going to be worldwide distribution. And so here we are 8 years later, 2020, right. That's actually taken place. So I see these opportunities and possibilities and say, okay, God, you did it before, you can do it again. You just need somebody willing and able to be obedient and, you know, things like that. So for me, a lot of things come from the spiritual aspect, and that's what drives me to do what I do in business and whatever it is that I encounter. And so here we are with a documentary that's will be released by Warner in the next couple of months.
That is amazing. There was so much in there that you said that I'm going to try to remember the things that I wanted to touch on. So number one, you questioned yourself because you would go and sit at the movies, you know, all day, all by yourself. But you didn't question it enough to let it stop you, right? So how did you, that's number one, because I have three other top nuggets that you dropped. So how did you, and I shouldn't say rationalize, because you did say you trusted God to, you know, lead you, and you did it, he did it before, and he'll do it again. So how did you, like, I question, like, did your mom know that you were doing that all the time? Did your friends know? Like, how did you describe that to people and be like, I just know this is something that I'm supposed to do? How did you handle that part of it?
Yeah, I don't think particularly my mom knew, but what you mentioned in that, she would always take us to the movie. She has love for movies as well. And she would always take us to the movie when it was in Charlotte, you know, all the time. And, you know, and so I believe for out of her two sons, I was the one that it really impacted, you know what I'm saying? My brother, not as much. So, and we're both creative, you know, things like that, but it's more so for me in this area. But I did have a lot of my friends like, man, you always at the movies. I was like, I know, man, but that's, I couldn't explain it at the time, like I said, but there was this one moment in 2000, I would say 2004, 2005. I was attending the church at the time in San Diego, and I was in, you know, the school of ministry, which happens like on Sunday evenings, and you go into the main service after. But that one day, a certain minister was there named Dr. Tim Story, and he had said that somebody at this church was going to do film and write, you know, scripts and, you know, all that kind of stuff. I wasn't there. So I come out of the school of ministry, you know, and they come into the regular service, and a couple of friends of mine say, "Hey, man, this is what Dr. Tim Story said, man. We think that's you." I was like, "Really?" Like, who else in this big old church, you know, we know they would do that? And I was like, so I kind of took that to heart. I'm like, okay, that to me was like God pressing enter. Like,
right.
So, and yes, that kind of, you know, so I began from that moment, I just took the initiative to start traveling back and forth to LA to, you know, go to different seminars. I used to go to the screenwriter seminar all the time to understand how to write. So I just kind of took the initiative and say, well, if they believe it's me, and I think God may be speaking through them because I wasn't there, I'm just going to take the initiative and be the person, you know? So it was never, for me, it was never like God said, do this.
Right.
It was always, for me, it was like, this is what God said. This is what the platform is that needs to be filled. And I'm just going to go ahead and be the person to do it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Wow. I mean, the self-confidence that took, to do stuff, like you said earlier, that's unpopular and not mainstream, it means that your gift was a powerful pull, that you had a very powerful pull. And sometimes I believe that's where the inner turmoil comes from, is because we know what we're supposed to do, but our ego gets in the way. And our ego says, no, to keep you safe, you need to not be out of the norm. You need to not, you need to blend in. You need to, you know, head down, because that's how you stay safe. But your gift is outside of that safety. So the confidence in yourself to do that and to continue to not be that conformist, that's amazing. That's amazing. So congratulations. And I mean, as such a young man too, that's amazing. So it's funny that you said Fashion Valley, because I used to love that mall. Oh my gosh.
It's my favorite mall today.
Oh, that was my mall, man. I loved that mall. I grew up in Southern California. I was born in Los Angeles. We moved to San Diego when I was 12.
Wow.
So I graduated from Mira Mesa High School in 89. So I don't think you're too far behind me, maybe 3 or 4.
Yeah.
So we were, you know, in San Diego just about the same time, because I didn't leave San Diego until 96. I think it was 96.
I moved to San Diego right in 97.
Did you?
From Oklahoma to San Diego, 97, yep.
Oh, so then we missed each other just barely. But yeah, now I live in the Northeast. I'm in New Hampshire now. This is home. I go, but all my family is all up and down the West Coast. So I'm in California quite a bit. And that's one of the places that I always have to go, is to the Fashion Valley Mall, because I'm always like, oh my gosh, it just keeps getting so much bigger.
Every time I go,
I'm like, holy crap, this place is huge.
Yes.
But yeah, I loved it. Okay, so the two other, I don't know if I'm going to remember the third, but the two other things that you said during that entire amazing intro about how you got to where you are. The first thing is, I just really admire somebody who is willing to say, I grew up this way, and my mother had such a positive influence on me, and by her chasing her dreams made me realize, you know, that not only could you do it, you have to do it, right? You have to do it. So when it comes down to that, that choice, because it could have gone either way for you, right?
Yeah.
You could have, you know, you could have veered off that path, for sure. when it comes to that choice, do you think that your cemented church upbringing had a lot to do with it?
Yes, I believe so. But even more so, my mom's tenacity to make sure that her sons knew God, you know, because people go to church all the time, but they just don't know God.
Right.
And there's a difference. And you know, that's something I do with our three daughters is I want to make sure you know God. You know, I want to make sure that you know God aside from church, aside from ministry, because I know, you know, I've been in ministry for 20 plus years. I know people who have been in ministry for so long, but then they stop doing ministry. They're like, man, I don't really know God. Right. I know ministry, right. but I don't know God. And so I think I honor my mom for that, because the time is we wake up 6 o'clock in the morning just with her, you know, we talk about the mid 80s, you know, and she's watching Marilyn Hickey and Charles Stanley, and she we're on our you know, you talk about the mid 80s, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, and we're on our knees with her praying at 6 o'clock in the morning. You know, that foundation, like I said, you know, ministry, when I say ministry started home, for me, it was a reality, because the ministry that my mom had, it started with us, you know? Right. And so she had to make sure that even though we was going to church, that our relationship wasn't based upon going to church, but it was right. based upon, because if the church was shut down tomorrow, then what?
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, so, and
absolutely.
And so, and I think right now during this pandemic is really an awakening moment, an eye-opening moment for people to realize, wait, I'm not doing ministry right now. You know, then they kind of really have to look at their lives like, where am I right now really with God without ministry?
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And so, church was a great part of it, but more so is the fact that I had my own personal relationship with God that was more important and more beneficial than just the church itself.
Right. Yeah. My grandmother was a Fred Price fan. So she watched him. I mean, she always had him on in the background on the radio. always. So I definitely relate. And you said you have three daughters. What are their ages?
One's about to be 13 on Tuesday. 13. One just turned 10, and we have a 9-year-old. And so Eden, Valentina, and Autumn. Autumn is actually my bonus daughter because I remarried. So we have three daughters together. So we always say bonus daughter. You know, my bonus daughter calls me dad. Mm-hmm. And my two oldest daughters, Eden and Valentina, called my wife moms.
Yeah.
Because we want to make sure, like, we're not second rate. This is a family. And so, you know. And so it's, you know, we've really been teaching family values, understanding. Every Thursday night for us is like a West family poker night. So we all play poker together.
Because we
give them their space to grow, but we also just, you know, every Saturday or every Sunday, we have this moment together where everybody has a scripture that spoke to them that week, and they explained to us, okay, this is what I've been reading. And so we're just really doing what I saw my mom do for me.
Right.
You know, I'm passing it on to my children. So, and encouraging, okay, what is it that you want to do in life?
Right.
You know, because I feel as parents is our job, you know, to help facilitate and train them in the way that they should go. In other words, they should go, not what we want them to go, right. but what they should go. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, what do you want to do? You know, oh, you want to be a veterinarian? Okay, here's what we need to set up for you. You know, you want to be an artist? Here's what we need to set up. You want to be this? We need to set this up for you, set this platform up for you so that when you're more capable of achieving this dream without some of the pressures and stress of not having the support of parents and things like that. So I learned that. So I wanted to teach, you know, have that in our family as well.
Yeah, that's really powerful. And I mean, I know that you understand just how important fathers are to daughters. And so I definitely commend you for not only being there for your daughters, but uplifting them and empowering them. Because what you said about the platform and preparing them for their journey is exactly what I was saying in the intro about, you know, no matter where you are in your life, you can do what you want. You know, don't tell yourself a story that limits your future.
Yes.
So your present, especially right now, I feel like God has stripped away all of the distractions.
Oh, yeah.
he's stripped away all the distractions. You don't have to go to work. You don't have to worry about gas. You don't have to worry. I know everybody's still struggling, but for the most part, people are looking around at their lives and they're taking stock, you know, and saying, you know, now that I don't have to worry about the commute in and, you know, the people at my job, they get on my nerves, you know, like, you know, the commute home and what are we going to have for dinner? I feel like this was like a reset.
Yes.
Like God was saying, okay, everybody's too busy.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't be too busy for God. You can't be too busy for your salvation and for your family unit to be healed. You can't be too busy for that. And so that's how I feel, is that he stripped away all those distractions. And who you become along the journey of following your path is what, to me, is the most important. Because who you become, even if it's a daily, you know, I'm going to be better than I was yesterday, I'm going to be better than I was 2 weeks ago, that's for me, that's what God wants. God wants you to, you know, that's what a Christian, that's the definition of a Christian, to be Christ-like.
Yes.
It's, you're never going to be Jesus, but to continue that striving and that, you know, want to be better. So with your faith so strong, talk to me about the music today.
Yeah.
And do your daughters listen to Cardi B? Because, you know, everybody.
That's the first thing that popped in my head was WAP. Well, man. I'll say we're blessed. We're blessed to have the daughters we have. Because they haven't been exposed to that much, you know, in terms of, because my daughter, she's 13, but then I see another 13-year-old who looks like a 16-year-old, and I'm like, whoa.
Well, they look like a 30-year-old.
It's like, wait. I think some of those songs that they may hear in passing or they may hear about, but I think we've helped train their ears to know what's good and not good. You know what I'm saying? You know, of course, later on, they're teenagers, they go, you know, they want to do it. But the foundation is already set and established to where they will know, like, you know what? I can't go that far. You know, that's kind of messing with my spirit a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So they, so we all, you know, always have to continue to monitor. Because I go in their room, I just go, hey, what's going on? You know? Yeah. And I'm like, what you watching? What you... Okay, okay, cool. You know what I'm saying? Okay. Just you have to be, you know what I'm saying?
You gotta stay on top of it.
Yeah.
With girls. I mean, with both sexes, but you know, I raised two girls. My girls are 26 and 24 now. And for sure I was always on top of it, you know, checking Facebook, checking Instagram, you know. Double checking their text messages, you know, incoming and outgoing, because it's important. And it only takes a very short window of time for stuff to go left, you know. So that's awesome. And so, who are your other inspirations for Christian music?
I would say, in Christian music in particular, you know, I'm a big fan of Israel Houghton. He was on tour with us when I was with Kirk Franklin, because he was actually Fred Hammond's keyboardist at the time.
Oh, wow.
I follow Israel quite a bit. You know, I'm a fan of Kirk. you know, and the things he's done, and just, you know, the longevity of his career, right. You know, and how he's has been that patriarch in a sense for this generation, you know,
yes.
That's coming up. And so, you know, mostly I'm listening mostly to a lot of jazz or classical mm-hmm. music, you know. It's just like, it gets me in a creative space that, you know, mm-hmm. you know, because it's, for me, especially classical music, if I'm writing, I'll just have classical music just playing. And it just, you know, gets me in a space where I'm just like, it becomes almost like background music to what I'm writing, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so, but for the most part, in terms of, you know, Christian music and artists, and even with this documentary, Christian Hip Hop, a lot of the guys that are in here, you know, the PIDs and the SFC, and those guys, Dynamic Twins, you know, those are people I mostly gravitate to because that was like my generation. That was like, you know, coming up. Nowadays, you know, Lecrae's and a lot of other guys, and Enemigo. I've listened to their music, but I don't particularly like listen all the time, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. But for me, it's, you know, just being as eclectic as I can, whether it's, you know, Christian gospel or Christian worship or Christian rap, you know, I like it all. And I would say, if there's any artist, I would say, who's your best male artist or best yeah. female? You know, I'm a big fan of John Mayer when it comes to music. I'm a big fan of Brandy. And so okay. those two of my life, you know, from two different extremes, you know,
right.
And so at any given time, you can find me in the car on a road trip, just playing John Mayer, just on the road, you know, or playing some Brandy if I feel like, yeah, you know,
right.
Or playing the new Kanye stuff or even the old Kanye stuff, you know? So, you know, so it's just very eclectic, you know, it kind of really, you know, depends on what, you know, what a mode I'm in, you know, right. what I want to listen to, and, you know, but for me, worship is a big deal, you know, because I love worship music, and just the, you know, the way the writing is done and production is done nowadays. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. My grandmother was a huge hymnal. Oh my gosh. Mm. you know, I always picture that Tina Turner, the Tina Turner movie with Angela Bassett, and in yeah. the beginning, the little girl singing "This Little Light of Mine." My grandmother was the old lady saying, "Quit all that gyrating." And
yeah,
that was my grandmother, because my grandmother was like, "No, praise is supposed to be hymnals." And, and then as I got older and started to going to Maranatha.
Maranatha music, yep.
Yes. Oh my gosh. That's when I was like, I was all in that with the music, and, you know, trying to be on that, you know, I'm good with the music and dancing, but then trying to, you know, have that, like you said, relationship with God, not just through music. So I remembered a couple of the things that I wanted to ask you. And the biggest thing for me is that I feel like men don't, and please correct me if I'm wrong, men don't, first of all, you said journaling, and you are the first man that I've ever heard of that journals.
Oh, wow.
And second, the self-reflection, you know, the looking back, that you talked about. So tell us how those two things came about in your journey, and, you know, how that practice was formed, those two practices.
Yeah, journaling has been a great deal in my life. I started at 15. Mm-hmm. I'm 45 now, so 30 years of my life is on paper. I still write on paper. The initial thought when writing a journal, and I remember to this day how it started. I went into my mom's room. I was 15 years old, because she knew I liked studying the Bible and, you know, getting more references and things like that. So I would always take her, like, Strong's Concordance and Matthew Henry. I would just take all these things and just study the Bible at that age. And so she had this little like journal. It was like a, it said daily journal, and it was like empty. It had nothing. It was just like a scripture at the top, and just like, and you write what you got from that scripture. So I said, "Hey, my youth, oh, you can have." So I started using it. Huh. You know, August 1990. I know what August 1990 was the first post, and so I used that as like my daily journal. First, you know, it's like, okay, I read the scripture at the top of the page and I write about what that scripture was. Then I just kept doing it every day. You know, then it turned into where I started getting tablets and just writing in them, okay, write the date and what I studied for that day. Then became more about, okay, what happened to me that day and how can God speak to me that, you know. And so it became that thing. And I believe also during the course of maybe that first year or two, I said, I want this to be something I write that I can give to my son one day, you know, so he can read my life. Yeah. You know, and you know, that's something we're working on now, you know, working on having a son. So that gave me the fire. Like I want the 15 year old me to be read by the 15 year old my son.
Yep.
You know. Wow. So the lessons I learned or the things I went through that he can, you know, it's different when your dad say don't do this. But then if you read him at the same age you are, like, man, dad did go through this. You know, I have these same questions I had. And I believe that opens up the opportunity to even have more, you know, conversations with a son. Even the other day, I was like, man, you know, and I was thinking, I'm not sure if I want to wait till he's 15. I want to give to him when he's 13. You know what I'm saying? Just, you know, to kind of speed up in life. But, you know, that was really, you know, part of the motivation of me continuing is that one day I want to pass this on to my son so he can read my life and see me. Because, you know, I go back quite a bit from times like, man. And, you know, what there was a moment when I was in San Diego. And he just got busy, you know, with ministry, church ministry and work, you know, working 60, 70 hours a week for the gas company, SDG&E. You know about SDG&E. You live there.
Oh, yeah. I know San Diego Gas and Electric well.
Yeah. So, and so I was, you know, at the time I was a meter service person, MSP, so I had my own truck and stuff. So I was, you know, doing 60, 70 hours a week and I was doing part-time ministry at the church. And I remember at the time I was sitting down with my daughter's mom at the time and our oldest daughter at the time, she was probably like one or two. And we was watching a movie called A Family That Prays. It was Tyler Perry's movie. One of his best movies I've ever seen.
P-R-E-Y-S. Had, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like with Katie Bates or something that was in it. Mm-hmm. And I remember to this moment I was watching it and I was reading this in my journal maybe a year ago. And it struck me. Cause it reminded me like of my passion at the time. Cause I was always, before I got married and had kids, I was always going to the movies. Right. And I was like, man, but now I got married, I was doing ministry, I was, you know, full-time working, you know, I wasn't able to do that as much. But I ran, it hit me so hard that I went into the back room, I got on my knees and started crying. And I was like, what happened to that young boy? You know? What happened to that young boy of faith? Because, you know, what I didn't mention is before we moved to Tulsa, Oklahoma, you know, I'm 12 or 13 at the time. My mom worked in two jobs. During the day, she worked at the Federal Reserve. And at night, we helped her, you know, clean office buildings.
Oh, and so, see?
You know about that too.
Right? Oh. Yeah.
So I was going through a moment at that time, seventh, eighth grade, where, you know, my father, you know, today we have a great relationship, but, you know, my father had denied me as a son. So we was going through a whole court, you know, situation, you know, DNA, you know, just like a whole thing. I had to be on the stand. So I had to come in and out of school, you know, to go through this, you know, and I remember my mom handing me a cassette tape of a guy named Carmen. I'm like, who is this white dude? You know what I'm saying? Everybody else in the street playing Eric B. Rakim and, you know, EPMD and, you know, LL Cool J.
Right.
You know?
Yes.
So, and it was the Radically Saved cassette, you know, back then. And so during the time we was, you know, clean the office buildings at night. I'll have my Walkman on. I'll put it in there. I'll be listening, you know, songs like Lazarus and, right, you know, all the songs. And I fell in love with his music. And, you know, and looking back, you know, years later after that happened, it was very therapeutic for me, you know, during that time. But I always tell my brother, you know, this, I could like see it, like it was yesterday. We would always walk out to the dumpster when we're finished cleaning up. We got all the bags, about to throw the stuff in the trash. My mom got the car running, heat on, we gonna run in. I would always tell him, I'm gonna know this guy one day. He said, man, you crazy.
Right.
You know? Like, how you gonna know him one day? You know, and I just had that faith. Like, I'm gonna know this guy one day. I just know it. You know, you 12, 13 years old, you know, you living in Charlotte. How is this gonna happen? Then of course you move to Oklahoma, and long story short, you find out he goes to the same church as you. Then he sees you dancing. You know, a few years later, you're on tour with him. And so at this moment, when I'm in my back room in San Diego after watching this film, Family That Prays, I'm reminded of that moment. Like, what happened to that little boy that had a kind of faith to say, I'm going to do this? Right. And so I took my journal out and I wrote down like this letter to Tyler Perry. So I'm gonna know you one day, you know. Even to this, I even printed it out and put it on the back of the journal. You know, this is like, man, this is like maybe 2009, and I said I'm gonna know you one day, and that gave me the push I needed to continue to pursue film like I felt in my heart. Right. And so, so that's what the journals do for me, because I go back and read what this 16, 17, 18, 22, 24, 25, 30-year-old dude was thinking. And I'm like, right, man, I didn't think like this dude. Who this cat?
Right.
That don't sound like me. And that helps me, you know, and, you know, kind of restructures and redirects my life and keeps me on path in a sense to be reminded of who I am in the midst of all the distractions.
Yeah.
Like, okay, forget out. Let me just... okay, this is who this kid is. This, you know, he's stealing me. Let's do this. You know.
Yeah, that focus and clarity. That's your why. You know, you come back to that and you feel that fire again. You know, through your own words.
Yeah.
That's some powerful stuff. So I have to ask you if you know someone. His name is Jared Cosley. He worked for, I want to say, what's the Capitol? That's what it is. He worked for Capitol Records, and he's a Christian. He's a Christian artist. He's a Christian rap artist. I think his stage name is Iliad. Yeah.
I probably may not know him directly, but I'm pretty sure I know him indirectly through someone else.
Yeah. So I'll send you his Instagram. I was just trying to find it. But I'll send you his Instagram because you guys definitely need to hook up. That's my cousin. That's my first cousin. That's my heart. I adore my cousin. And our family is extremely religious. And so he's kind of stepped outside of what's the norm, like you were saying earlier. And I just admire him greatly for that. So I'm gonna do a connection and see if he can help you in any way with promotions or whatever you guys need. But he's just the man. And he's got, you know, some music out that's on iTunes and stuff. So, So I'll have to do that connection. So tell us, we don't have much time left, but I want to hear all about your movie and, you know, how my audience can help spread the word, can sign up for, you know, newsletter or whatever. Tell us about that, kind of in depth. Tell us about it.
Right now the website is continuing to be up is mydropthemovie.com, MIC like Mike, drop the movie.com. Same thing on Instagram, Mike Drop the Movie. And so, you know, we have our PR team that's based out of Nashville, because we have a premiere happening in Nashville in a couple months. Under safety regulations and COVID and social distance and,
right.
You know, we're supposed to be initially in May, then everything got shifted to August, it got shifted to October. So,
right.
But yeah. And so a lot of the marketing right now from this week moving forward, a lot of that's coming from Warner Music and Gupta Media, because Warner Music has their own marketing company. So one way is really just go onto the website, connect with us. You can go into the Instagram at Mike Drop the Movie as well. Connect with us. And just we have a couple official trailers that are also out there that are getting pretty good circulation as well. And just promote it in that way, spread the word, because it will be released this fourth quarter, because right now we're at the end of the third quarter.
Right.
So next quarter it will be released. It's looking to be mid-October. From what I understand, it's supposed to be either Netflix or Hulu, but it will be released streaming everywhere. Then later in the first quarter of next year is when the DVD and Blu-ray and all those kind of things are being released. But just really kind of spreading the word, you know, checking out the trailers, all that stuff is, you know, connected through the website as well as the, Instagram. And, you know, we have merchandise is going to be posted real soon. Shirts, masks, fanny packs. Yeah, you know.
Nice.
Yeah, so just really kind of spread awareness. And we're just kind of really seeing, you know, God's timing in this, because we was initially wanted to release it in 2017. You know, I started working on it beginning of 2015. And it just wasn't time, even though I wasn't understanding the timing of God at the time, the frustration behind it. It came to be that we started to redo the film, re-edit the film last year, 2019, in November, because I got a call from my rep at Warner, said, hey, and with everything that's going on with Kanye and Christian rap, I think we need to re-edit this and add some more people. And I was like, okay. You know, what budget do you need, that kind of stuff. And
right.
And so now we like, okay, this is what it's supposed to be. You know, thank God we waited. We didn't rush it, you know.
Right.
And so we're here now, like in the midst of a pandemic. Like the way the trailer, when we released the trailer, I believe it was in March or April, the official trailer to the new cut of the film, the way it just kind of spread like wildfire on Facebook and social media, tens of thousands of views. I was like, oh my God, this is crazy. I didn't know that many people actually like Christian hip hop. It just right. came out of the woodwork. And even today I'm interviewing a young man whose song we use in the end credits, because he saw the trailer. We was just finishing, the film was already cut. You just doing some stuff, but we was having trouble finding the right song for the end credits. So, you know, we have people, because the trailer's out, everybody's like, hey, man, you know, yeah. I got some music. And I say, I listen to it. I listen to everybody's music, giving, you know, my critique and notes or whatever. And this one song came through from a young man. I, for the first 30 seconds, I said, oh, my God, we have our song for the end credits. Uh-huh. You know, he had no clue. I reached out to him and said, hey, man, we would love to use your song for the end credits. You know, reached out to my people. They love it. And, you know, can we use it? So, you know, send us your publishing information, all the legal right. stuff that needs to be done. He was like, oh my God, are you serious? You know, right. And it is, you know, he never thought in any imagination that him putting his music out there to me, like, just check it out, that it would be at the end of a film, the first documentary about Christian hip hop. And so, you know, and for me, and I tell my wife all the time, she knows this, I feel my purpose in life is to help ignite other people's purposes. Mm. And mm. that's what drives me. You know,
I say I am the catalyst for positive yes. change.
Yes.
That's exactly what I say to people all the time. They're like, what do you do? I am the catalyst for positive change. So we're twin flames, but go ahead. Go ahead. Yeah.
And so it would be befitting that, because, you know, I was one of the first, probably the first young person that became a choreographer in Chris, you know, and just in hip hop in general, right, at a young age, 15, 16, in the early 90s, because I was like, I'm just do it, you know, and that just became something different, you know, became a catalyst and being one of the first dancers to be on a tour, Christian tour, you know, and just so many firsts for me. And say, well, it would be befitting that God said, I'm going to use you as the first person to be a catalyst to do a film about Christian hip hop, because it's been tried at least a dozen times in the past 20 years.
Yeah.
But it's never been done.
Right.
And for me to be like, so I tell people all the time, I'm just humbled that God trusts me to do it, because there's a lot of people who try to do it who just didn't complete it.
Yeah.
And so, and I tell people all the time, I'm not a, you know, I'm not an avid gung-ho Christian hip hop follower, but I'm just willing to do something that needs to be done, because I remember that stage in my life when it was very beneficial for me, and how we need to pay homage to these pioneers and really talk about what's happening now among young people in this culture. Right. And so, I'll tell people all the time, God is only using me to create the platform for you guys to even do much more. And that's why the soundtrack is so important to me as well, because the artists that are on the soundtrack are mostly unknown artists.
Right.
Whose music are performed in the film.
Right.
And so it's like this, you know, I even got the letter from, you know, Warner sends us his marketing strategy letter, say, this is what we feel we need to go. And they had a lot of the Christian hip hop experts in the music arena, you know, check out the trailers. And it was like, oh my God, they're like thumbs up, enthusiastic. They're like, oh my God, this is crazy. That's awesome. And they're talking about the soundtrack. They said the only person they recognized on the soundtrack was Petty D from the list of artists. Mm-hmm. But they said, but it's great, because all these other artists that nobody knows, this might drop, create a platform for them. I said, and that's all we want to do. Yeah. Is create a platform for the message and the culture and the genre to be widespread and give these young people who you wouldn't even known had they not been in the film, or the music been in the film, you never heard. And so that's what I like to just sit back.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That's cool. You ain't gotta know who I am. Okay, I'm the director, but yeah. I'm trying to push them. Yeah. And give these other people opportunity. So that's what drives me, is to help people step into their destiny. And yeah.
That's awesome. That's exactly what this podcast is all about, is empowering people and saying, you know, I believe in you.
Yeah.
And I believe in your message. So how can I help you amplify that message? Yes. So that's amazing. That's amazing. And that's why I don't do pre-interviews. That's why I don't do, you know, somebody wants to be on my podcast, come on. There's no pre-interview. There's no questionnaire. There's no, because I know that God's going to put the right people on this podcast, and the message that's supposed to get to somebody is going to get. So I relinquish the control that people think they have. I relinquish that control and say, I know God's going to do what needs to be done. You know, and so that's what helps me do exactly what you're doing, you know, amplifying their message. That's awesome. Yes. That is an amazing gift. And the fact that you see that with such clarity is amazing. I don't know that I've met someone else like you. So that's awesome. But so what would you say specifically to those artists, you know, who've been kind of plugging away? And it's funny, because I met this dude at Home Depot that, you know, was singing, and I was like, you got an amazing voice, man. And he was like, yeah, you know, I'm trying to be a singer. I said, wait, you either are or you aren't. I said, whether you're famous or not doesn't dictate whether you're a singer or not, you know. So how would you tell those, what would you tell those, you know, struggling artists slaving away at Home Depot? What kind of advice would you give them?
continue to be persistent, because I remember working at the Get and Go in Tulsa, Oklahoma, night shift. And I would be there from 10 at night to 6 or 7 in the morning. But at some point, I could lock the door, and I would just, like, choreograph dances.
Yeah.
You know, even in the midst of doing that, this, you know, before, you know, a lot of things popped off, and I went on tour with Kirk and things like that. Being at SDG&E for 12 years and still having this fire. And like I said, I had to be reignited, you know, when I saw this Tyler Perry movie, A Family That Prays, because it's like, man. But it just like, okay, you know, self-motivated in a sense. Just remaining to be persistent, even in the midst of the pressure or the uncertainty, because that's where you're better processed. When nothing seems like it's going your way, that's the best time to be persistent, because you're preparing yourself. I heard Miles say, Dr. Miles Monroe was a spiritual mentor of mine. He told me, he says, make sure you know the lines when the curtains open. Because the curtain's going to open, and you better know your lines. In other words, you need to prepare now before the curtains open, so that when the curtains do open, you're ready. And that's what it is, because you're behind closed doors. You're behind the curtain. No one knows who you are. You're working at Home Depot. You're working at, you know, the post office, or you're working in the hospital, wherever you are. No one knows who you are, and the curtains are closed. But in due season, those curtains will open, and you need to know your lines. And I believe is when the curtains are open is the most important. I think Kobe said it also best. Sue says, the joy is in the journey.
Mm.
You know.
That's right.
Because when you get there, you already prepared for that moment.
Right.
And that persistence, and, you know, like you telling that gentleman, hey, either you are or you're not. You know, it's like I think Yoda said, no try, do.
Right. You know? Do or do not.
Uh-huh. Do or do not, you know. So it's just that moment when you realize I have to do this and continue to be persistent and continue to practice my gift and my skill, and continue to sharpen it when nobody's looking, when nobody knows my name.
That's right.
Because when the curtains open and the lights are on me, I'm ready for this moment.
Right.
And that's what drives me. It's like, okay, I'm gonna just keep doing this, even though there's frustration, there's a pressure. Oh, I didn't go to work again today. Man, I really want to be doing this. But it's those moments that define you. Yeah. As an individual, defines you, it really breaks away at your ego, you know, and you're humble for the moment, because you appreciate it more, because you know how much it took to get there,
right,
to have that moment.
Right. Yeah, that's amazing. So persistence, be resilient, keep after it, and hone your craft.
Yes.
Hone your craft, because if that's your passion, if that's your God-given gift, then he expects you to treasure it. He expects you to work on it, to nurture it. So that's awesome. I love it. Oh, Darius, this has been amazing. I always love it when I look down and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's been an hour already. And, you know, I could talk to you for a couple more hours. So thank you for sharing time and space with me and my audience. MikeDropTheMovie.com on everything. And when people sign up and everything, I really would like for you guys to, the audience, to go and shout out and share, you know, talk about it, because these kinds of endeavors that are extremely out of the norm are exactly what we need right now. Exactly what we need. So I thank you for your passion.
Thank you for having me on here. This has been wonderful. It's been great. Love it.
You're very welcome. I'm going to reach out to you because I probably am going to have you on after the movie, you know, three months down the road, so we can see and follow up with you and see how things are going. I would love that.
I'd love it too. That'd be great.
All right. Well, I'm going to put my email address right now because I don't have yours. Because I, like I said, I want to stay in touch. And I think there is so much that people can learn from your experiences that we didn't even, you know, touch on today. Yeah. But so again, audience, if you go and sign up for newsletter, I mean, whatever it is, just make sure you shout him out and, you share it on your platforms as well. Cause he is another catalyst for positive change. So that's awesome, Darius.
Yeah. I'm writing it down now. I'm seeing.
I know it's so long. I love it. Well, Darius, thank you so much again. And if you, you know, if you need anything from me, if you have artists that want to come on my podcast or, you know, anything that I can do, please let me know.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I will. Yes. Right. As a matter of fact, I do know an artist, a good friend of mine, kind of a protege in a sense of just being persistent.
Yes.
I joke with him. He just did a, he was just a special guest with Kim Burrell on her Facebook Live.
Oh, nice. This past week,
because he just released a new song and things like that. But during the pandemic, he's frustrated. He's an artist, you know, who's working full time, but also trying to be an artist.
Yeah.
And he was like, man, I can't take it. You know, everything's going on. He was just a part of a church that we were attending. He was been there for 8 years and just, he's like, man, I'm going back to Ohio, bro. I'm like, really? I said, okay, I pray for you. But I already knew he gonna be back because he's gonna go back for maybe a couple of days and we're like, what did I do? You know, so
yes.
It took about a week. But he said the moment he started unpacking the car in Ohio, he was like, man, what did I just do?
Made a big mistake. Yes.
And so and within 2 weeks, he was back. He just called me, man, I'm coming back. I don't know what I was doing. God really dealing with me, you know, that kind of thing. So when these pivotal moments happen for him, I say, what's up, Ohio? He like, man.
I love it. Yes. He's like,
none of this would be possible, he says, had I stayed in Ohio. So, yeah, I've been there. I've done it before, but I wanted you to go through it because I can tell you, you had to go through that moment for yourself and be like, oh, okay, I need to go back. So right. I would love to connect you with him. His name Absolutely. Is Lynn. His artist name is Lynn Wilson. He's on Instagram as well, but I'll connect you with him because he has a great story as well. And
I love it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you so, so much. And I know I don't have to say it, but man, I just feel that that movie is going to blow up. And it's going to help so many people embrace their unusualness, you know,
yes.
And paying homage to those OGs is just such a blessing to see where we've come from. Like you said, that self-reflection on a musical, you know, scale is just amazing. So thank you so much again. I would do my typical namaste, but I broke my hand last week.
Oh, wow.
So no, I didn't hit anybody. Everybody keeps asking if I hit somebody. But no, I didn't hit my hand. I wouldn't be using my left hand anyways. But no, yeah. I didn't hit anybody. I just fell. I'm clumsy. So. Wow. But yeah, so thank you again. I appreciate it. Truly. Yes.
Wow. You're welcome. Very welcome.